Hi, this is Terry Borum with All at Sea Southeast Magazine, and you're listening to Shooting the Breeze Sailing Podcast from theescapepods.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Shooting the Breeze Sailing Podcast, brought to you by theescapepods.com. This is episode number 17 and 18, actually. We're going to do a two-parter. You'll get the first part this week and second part probably next week. We're going to sit down with Kamal Iandiotero, if I'm saying that right. He's a guy from Baltimore, started sailing about 2 years ago. And he's got big dreams because he's a big guy. He's planning on building a 54-foot cruising boat by hand in his backyard. And basically because he's about 6'7", and you know, they don't make boats for him to fit comfortably. So he's going to customize this cruising boat, and he's hoping to build it over the next 2 or 3 years. And, you know, at basically not cut rate, but, you know, saving as much money as he can possibly save in the process. So I got to sit down with him last night in his home in the northeastern part of Baltimore City. And he was great to invite me over. Lots of hospitality, met his family and everything. We sat down, talked for almost over 2 hours. So we're going to do this first part about 50 minutes worth. And then next week we'll catch the rest of it. So thanks a lot to Kamal. I hope you find his story intriguing as I do. And enjoy the show.
What's wrong with beer? We're sailors. We can have beer, right?
We can have some beer.
All right, we'll put the recorder right there. Looks like it's recording.
Okay, well, you can start.
Go ahead. All right, everybody, welcome to, I believe this is episode 17. 17 is the episode.
Seven, which is good. Seven is my lucky number.
There you go. That's good. The Shooting the Breeze Sailing Podcast. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wedding, and I'm sitting here with Kamal. And I never got around to figuring out your last name.
So. it's Kamal Iandiotero.
Iandiotero.
Iandiotero, yeah.
Okay, that's good. And his daughter is filming us on the phone, so she's going to be sitting propped up with her, you know, her arms are probably going to fall asleep here in about 5 minutes.
She's a teenager.
She's got boundless energy. Right. That's cool. All right, we're sitting in Kamau's house, and we're gonna talk sailing for a while here.
All right.
And just for the video, you had a couple videos posted on Andy's 59-north.com. Right. So if anybody's curious, you can find at least some videos that you did previous to this, and then we'll find out where this is gonna go.
Right. Well, this one's gonna go. I have a YouTube page like most of the world does.
Okay.
And so for the YouTube page, we're sitting here with Jeff Whittick.
There you go.
Of the Escape Pods?
TheEscapePods.com.
Right.
The Shooting the Breeze Sailing Podcast. I do a music podcast, too, that I'm just kind of developing on the side. But that's more of an indulgent pleasure than anything else. Kind of ripping through some of my archives and that kind of thing. But for the sailing, Kamal, the big draw, I think, you know, we met down at the boat show briefly, and then you gave me a call and like, hey, what's your, where did I get this card from? Who are you?
Yeah, no, it's funny because you had did a an interview with Andy,
right?
And I'm like, okay, it's a, because he was, you're on his podcast, and he's on yours. I'm like, that's brilliant,
right?
And so I was trying to find your podcast.
Right.
Internet web searches, trying to Google it. And
yeah.
I couldn't find it. And then on a Monday morning, I went to get in my car, and lo and behold, your car was sitting in my change thing. I'm like, huh? Is this guy like watching me? Or something? How did I get his car? I was really blown away. Because it was total serendipity that I had listened to the, Andy posted it, right?
Right.
So of course I listened to it, and then I try to find you on the weekend. Right. Then Monday morning, I get in my car, and there's your card. And I had not realized that we had met there
right.
Until I heard you say that somewhere later. Oh, no, I called you.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, dude, you'll never believe what happened. I was just trying to find you, and your card magically appeared.
Right?
Yeah, this dude is a wizard. Is. You mess with Harry Potter or something?
Right. Yeah, because I got that phone call. I'm like, who's this guy? It was a 443 number. Generally, I don't answer the phone unless I know who it is. And I'm like, well,
you know, it could be one of my girlfriend's family or something. You know what I mean? I don't have their number. So I called her. You're like, hey, this is Kamau. And I'm like, because I had seen the video that you did going to the boat show. So, I mean, right away, I was like, oh, wow, okay, you know. Okay. And you're like, yeah, how did I get this car?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I met you. And you're like, where?
So were we both trying to talk to the Shards?
I think so. Like, I came up, what happened was, and, you know, Andy won't probably publicize it, but halfway through his seminar
the power went out.
Well, not only that, prior to that, when he took the break, the reason he took the break is because his SD card ran out on his on his recorder.
Okay.
So immediately he said, oh, we're going to take a break. And he called me up. And he's like, hey, can I borrow your SD card? So I gave it to him, and he recorded the rest of it on my SD card. So at the end of the thing, I went up there, and I'm just kind of hanging around waiting for him to get done, you know, because he was talking to you. He was talking to the Shards. He was talking to a couple different other people. So I was like, all right, you know, I'll just hang around and wait. And I think at that point is when you were trying to get a picture with them. So I took a picture with you and them. You know, and then I think after you guys all walked away, Andy's just kind of standing there. I'm just kind of standing there, and I'm like, can I get my SD card back? He's like, oh, wow.
Right.
Wait a minute. Let me transfer that. Okay. You know. So it was just kind of funny. But it was a great seminar.
And, yeah, it was. It was pretty
good. You were, I think you were asking a couple questions or whatnot.
Yeah.
Why don't we just, you know, we'll just start with how did you get into sailing?
That beautiful woman you saw walk by.
Uh-huh.
For my birthday, she got a one of those little sailing things. You go out for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on a perfectly hot day in July.
Okay.
But when we got on the water, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Even though it was a July hot summer day.
Right.
90 plus.
A little bit of breeze.
On land. We got out there in the water, and it was just beautiful.
Right.
And I've always loved boats.
Uh-huh.
My father, he would like charter a little fishing boat every now and when we would go camping and stuff or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, from Baltimore. Okay. How do you not live in Baltimore and not like the water?
Exactly.
And all things, you know, naval to some degree.
Yeah, yeah.
My father's a longshoreman.
Okay.
His father was a longshoreman. All of my uncles were longshoremen.
Wow.
So the water, boats, and that and the industry around that has always been something that I've been attracted to.
That's cool.
In my professional career, I'm a project manager, senior project manager.
Right.
And a proprietor of my own business.
Right.
And I got into it, actually, when I was probably 6 or 7. My mother used to have Better Homes and Gardens magazines.
Right, right, right.
And back then, they would have blueprints in them.
And okay. Right.
I would actually make blueprints. And then, you know, World War II movies and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I would draw boats.
Okay.
I was all into, you know, World War II era naval ships, and I would build models.
Oh yeah,
you know, I remember when the first time. Oh yeah, first time I built the Arizona, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I would paint it, and I was a serious modeler.
Right, right.
Back in my, I guess whatever you call the age between 8 and 11.
Oh yeah, I think I built the Midway, Battle of Midway.
Okay,
you know what I mean? I built that aircraft carrier with my dad.
I used to do airplanes, and then of course,
the
modern airships, the Tomcat, and all those. The one with the wings that moved back in the day.
Yeah,
that
we was probably all had the same set of models.
Right.
All those little things of paint and all the decals and everything.
Very true. Yep. And I used to draw boats, right? Mm-hmm. Boats and spaceships.
Well, there you go.
That's what I used to draw.
Right.
And so, you know, you get older, you have children, you get married, you do the things that a responsible contributing person in society does.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, when I went sailing, and I never realized exactly. You know, I knew people had propulsion by wind,
right.
But I really didn't know that much about it. And so I was just so fascinated by it.
Right.
I just went and started researching. And
it doesn't hit you until you start moving.
Yeah, like, it doesn't hit you until you start moving. Then you think, you know, I could move for free.
Right.
I can move from one point to the next.
Yeah, right.
For free.
Hmm.
And that's actually in a point in my life where,
uh-huh.
You know, I'm you know, separated, going through divorce.
Right, right.
And looking to capture some of the passion back in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, just let you know, I'm recording a radio program. Okay. So trying to find passion in life again.
Right.
And this was like my key. I said, you know, I could probably own a sailboat. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you start reading about the parties and Chichester.
The lifestyle.
Right, and all those people who've just made that lifestyle about it. I'm like, I could do that.
Right, right.
But then I go to look at boats, and being 6'7", you know, almost 400 pounds, I don't fit in most boats.
Right, not comfortably.
Not comfortably at all. And I took a bunch of classes and stuff, and we're sitting here talking about boats before we press play or record. Uh-huh. I actually learned to sail on two boats. Okay. The first one was at the Annapolis School of Sailing.
Okay.
It's a Rainbow 24, and I actually rent those pretty often. I took my daughters this summer and took some friends
out. Did you like it?
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was easier than I found
it. Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So the future sailor.
Well, the Rainbow, the Rainbow 24, it's not a dinghy, right?
Right, right. It's
but
bigger.
It's still a small day sailor.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's got nothing below
a
bucket.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And, you know, 1,500 pounds.
Place to stick
on
your
field.
Feet. Yeah,
I wouldn't even stick my feet down. There's wet most of the time. But they, once the wind hit them, they move.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I learned to sail.
Okay.
My ASA 101, I went to ASA track in Nigeria World. So I learned to sail on that boat. But I knew when I wanted to do cruising, to learn how to operate bigger boats.
Right.
The Annapolis School of Sailing doesn't get into the bigger boats till you have to pay a whole lot of money.
Oh,
one of those other classes.
Right.
So I started, just again, serendipity. I was watching YouTube. And I came across videos by the Maryland School of Sailing and Seamanship.
Okay.
Captain Tom Tersey out of Rock Hall.
Rock Hall, okay.
And I learned more. This is not to disparage the Annapolis School of Sailing or any other school out there, but I learned more from their videos than I had from anywhere else. And I said, well, if they're this thorough on tape, this is where I want to learn to sail.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it is the best sailing school around. I know some people say, well, you can't really learn sailing. You know, sailing schools are a joke. No,
that's not true.
It's not true.
Right.
There are people that think they know what they're doing.
Right.
But they really don't. I mean, they have this this one video on their YouTube page that talks about storm conditions and, you know, what's a true way to avoid storms, or how to apply certain apparatus in terms of drogues or storm sails and all the things you need. I mean, just excellent, not just information, but the way it's formatted in terms of this is what you do, or these are what your options are in these types of circumstances. And this is what the evidence shows, kind of thing. So it's an excellent school. So anyway, I took my 103, 104, and 105. And have I taken 106? I took a whole bunch of classes. And so, you know, I've gotten to the point where I'm not done with classes, but I think I might be. Because I think the rest of it's now ocean sailing.
Right, right.
And pretty much at that point, you know, I could crew with somebody. And Andy's actually offered me a spot on that beautiful Swan 57.
Yeah.
Still trying to work out. I worked that out with my schedule.
Right, but I
would love to do that.
Well, these classes, I talked to a guy from Bay Sail up in Havre de Grace at the boat show. Captain Bill Dixon, I think his name was. Yeah. And I was looking at their website. You know what I mean? They've got all those classes outlined.
We charter from Bay Sail.
Do you? I was going to say, that was the next thing. But these classes, like now that you've done, what, you said the first five, I guess?
Yeah, a bunch of them.
So now you're basically certified to go, you can charter a boat.
Yeah, I've got my ASA book. Right. You know, if it's an ASA-affiliated place, I don't think they can say no.
Right.
But now I've learned that, you know, once people know that you really know what the hell you're talking about.
Right.
You know, you're good to go. I remember my girlfriend rented a chartered boat last year. Uh-huh. She doesn't have anything but a credit card.
Yeah. So you got a big enough balance of a credit card.
You know, sailing's not a cheap thing, buddy.
Well, and I think, I guess what I want to distinguish is, like, you're just a guy, you know, you live in the city. It's not like you don't belong to a marine or you don't have a boat. You know what I mean? Like, I benefited from people at my boat club. Because I was able, a friend of mine got me into sailing. He took me two or three times. And then, you know, when it was time for me to buy a boat, he said, just bring, you know, we'll get you to be a member of this club and whatever. So my sailing school was, A, the Hard Knocks school of sailing. But it was also a group of people that, you know what I mean, that I was already involved with. And not everybody can have that, you know what I mean? So that's where... it's nice to know that anybody can just go, all right, you know, this is what I want to do. Here are my goals. And there's a way for them to go do it at these American sailing schools. And there's, you know, there's ones in Annapolis, there's Havre de Grace, there's Rock Hall, all that kind of stuff. Right, so. Right.
What, you got to sneeze?
Go ahead. Just do it. Save money. I've been coughing and sneezing for the last 3 months, so right. Don't worry about it.
Well, you know, it's funny because even though I took the classes and I'm certified through ASA, right. Things always go in several branches. So yeah, actually, yeah. I had just Googled sailing clubs in Baltimore after that initial one, and I found an African-American sailing club called the Universal Sailing Club here in Baltimore.
Wow.
And well, it's actually, well, Annapolis and Baltimore. The Commandant lives in Baltimore. And, okay. I don't know what you call it. The fleet captain lives in Annapolis. And he has a brand new 2012 Jeannot 379.
Okay.
Nice boat.
Oh, yeah.
And so anyway, I hooked up with those guys, and then lots of sailors there that you know, then you have that community to reinforce. As a matter of fact, I've only been sailing for what, 2 seasons, and I've already probably logged the more, I'm gonna say, credentials or hours than a lot of the other members of the sailing club, just because of the passion and fervor that I've attacked it with.
Right. That's cool. Do they have a physical presence, or are they just kind of like at a...
They don't. They don't have a clubhouse.
Brick and mortar.
Right. No, they meet out of...
Okay.
What's the marina downtown on Canton? Can't remember. But we have our meetings down there.
Okay.
Like I said, again, the fleet captain, he's a really nice house. right off of the South River in Annapolis. I don't even want to ask.
Well, yeah. First
class, I mean, but yeah, you know, sailing's full of affluent folks.
So. Right. I think, you know, what I always try and do is not differentiate between that, but it doesn't matter how much money you've got, you're all about sailing. Right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the great thing about any kind of club like that, you get a group of people together, and that's all they want to do is talk about sailing, tell stories, war stories, you know what I mean, fish stories, whatever kind of stories you want.
And drink.
And that would be, you know, I would say if you want to get into sailing, definitely get into the schools and that kind of thing, but, you know, don't be afraid to go ask around for boat clubs, or, you know, marinas, you know, they're all about the money and storage and all that kind of thing, but, you know, there's social members that we have that just come in that don't have boats. There's different levels of membership for all these clubs and yacht clubs and boat clubs, whatever you want to call them. So, and, you know, it's great that you were able to find that, because now, you know, obviously you can be crew with these people. You know what I mean? Do you get invitations to go crew all the time?
Yeah, you know, there's lots of people, because it seems like people always want to sail, but most people have to work.
just sneeze.
Just do it.
You can press pause and go take care of yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
But, so yeah, so that's been my experience with it. What about you?
What's the name of the club again?
See, Universal Sailing Club.
Universal Sailing Club.
Yeah.
When I got started, my grandfather had a boat when I was, say, my early 20s, when I was having a kid and all that kind of stuff. And I would hear about it, you know, oh, Pop's got this boat, you know, whatever. And, you know, he invited me to come down and check it out. And I knew it was a sailboat, and it was a small, like an 18-footer or something like that. And I saw pictures of it, but I just never, you know, I was young, 20s, working 3-4 jobs, having a kid, you know, I just never got the off time to, like, go with him, you know what I mean? And then he passed away in 1999, and I was just kind of like, you know, I remember going over to my grandmother's house and helping her, and I ended up with the picture of the little boat on the trailer, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, that would have been so cool to do that, and I just never got around to it. And about 3 years later, I was working... I worked for Donnelly Printing. It's a big conglomerate, you know, printing outfit. And I had switched from one department to another department, and I'm just getting to know these people. And it was the summer. It was right around July 4th, and I was kind of complaining, you know, I got a week off. I don't have any plans. I don't have a lot of money. I'm like, you know, I'm thinking about going camping. I wanted to go down to, like, Elk Neck and go kayaking or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, even Elk Neck's $40 a night or whatever, you know what I mean? And, one of the guys that, you know, I just met previously in this new department was like, hey, you know, I got a sailboat down in the bay. Why don't you come down and go sailing? I'm like, sure. You know, what do you got in mind? And he's like, well, we can do 2 days down to Annapolis and back. And I'm like, whoa, you know, all right, this must be like some kind of big yacht, you know. And I'm just like, well, hey, nope. I said, you know, my buddy Chris lives in, at the time, my buddy Chris was living down towards Annapolis. And I said, do you mind if I bring him along? He's like, no, no problem. You know, the more the merrier. So I ended up driving down to Annapolis on a Friday night, picking up Chris, driving back. He parked his car in Eastport somewhere. Drove back to Lancaster the next morning. We picked up Tom. We drove down to Hans's Point, which is where I belong now. And he had a McGregor 26.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, as Spartan can be. I mean, you know, barely had a battery hooked up to the lights, you know. Just enough, you know, a porta potty and a cooler, basically. You know what I mean? No Dodger, no Bimini, no nothing, you know. And I just remember getting down to the boat club and seeing all these boats out in the morning. Going, wow, this is cool, oh, you really? Know. Okay. And he had to get out on a little rowboat, and he had to row out to get it and bring it up to the dock, you know. And okay. It's all kind of sharp looking. And we get on there, and within, like, that afternoon, I mean, I was hooked. Because it wasn't even that windy, but we were just kind of ghosting along, doing 2 or 3 knots down the bay, you know. And I'm like, this is just amazing.
Wow.
And we went down to an ab. We had a big party that night. We ended up partying up down at Jellyfish Joel's, which is in Fairley Creek. And then coming into Annapolis, like, Tom's like, well, we have to go into Annapolis under sail. So as soon as we got under the bridge, we put the sails up. And, you know, even though we had the motor on half the time, right, we'd go in and go up Ego Alley and turn around and come back up and do, like, the whole parade thing.
Okay.
But it was so cool because we pulled into a slip there, one of those marinas right downtown, where literally, I think we paid, I don't know, $50-$60 for the night.
Right.
And all we stepped off the boat onto the dock,
and
we
downtown.
Were in downtown.
Yeah, yeah, I love it.
Right, and we went to McGarvey's, and we're eating soft shell crabs, right. And we're getting drinks, and we're doing jello shooters, and oyster shots, and, you know, all this stuff, and having a great time. And then the next morning, my buddy Chris had to leave and go back to work, so he got up and basically went, walked to his car, and was off. And then me and Tom took the boat back up, and we stopped at Bodkin Creek. There's a place up there called the Cheshire Crab, and it was amazing because we literally just pulled into this marina, pulled up at the fuel dock. Hey, can we stay here tonight for $30? And the guy's like, sure, you know, no problem.
Oh, cool.
Shower, pool, you know,
right.
Crab house, right. The whole nine yards. And I remember going to bed that night, like, you know, Tom was up in the V berth, and I was laying back on the quarter berth, and the hatch was open. You know, it was July, right around July 4th. It was like that crispness you get in the summer when it's like real dry out,
mm-hmm.
And you know, the stars are out, and you know, there's houses around, but it's, you know, it's kind of nice. You're on the water, you can hear the water, and I'm just like, man, this is just amazing.
Yeah, let me tell you, we one of the classes I took was the I think it was a 106,
uh-huh.
Captain Gary Hudson. Uh-huh. So, if any of your listeners know him, he's a Baltimore guy. He was the captain there, but he has a slip for his boat.
Okay.
Over at the Baltimore Yacht Club.
Okay.
So one of the, you know, I don't know if you know about that class, but you have to, you know, it's like a 5-day sail.
Okay.
And you anchor out a couple times.
Right, right, right.
You go to, you know, you dock a couple times.
Right, right.
Well, so the time we docked was on Mother's Day, and okay. We went to his home port at the right. Baltimore Yacht Club. Now, I'm from Baltimore. I've been all up and down Essex.
Right.
All up and down Dundalk.
Right.
I had driven by this place, but right. I'd never... had, of course, never been there. It's
right.
A private club.
Right.
And to see a community that I'm familiar with from that perspective, that totally opened my eyes. Because seeing the city from water is totally different.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing a certain part of, you know, something that's real familiar just from that perspective
right.
is really amazing.
And, changes everything.
Right. And it's the same thing. You know, it's a private yacht club, and they've got the house and the pool and
right,
all
right,
the,
right.
the things that come along with that, and you begin to see, you know, you can be on vacation right in your own right backyard.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
no doubt. And that was one of the first things that trip, that first night, we pulled into Fairley, and literally, I think we told this story on episode 10, because we pulled around behind the bar and actually made the mistake of tying to a tree in the shallows, because it was a McGregor 26, it only drafted like 18 inches,
right.
You know what I mean? So we pulled it right up to where the back of the boat was almost hitting bottom, and we tied to a tree, and then we would jump off, walk through the water like 15 feet, and then go to the bar. Well, that night, we walked up to the restaurant, and we're sitting there at the bar, and there's a guy, you know, gentleman in his 60s, you know, Rolex, you know, the whole nine yards, and we just start talking, and he's like, well, you know, how did you get here? Like, oh, we're on my buddy's sailboat. He's like, oh, you know, I've got a 45-foot whatever, you know, And, you know, this guy is upper crust. He's got the best of everything. Mm-hmm. But all he wants to do is talk about sailing. Mm-hmm. You know, we're on a bunch of scrungy drunks on a 26, you know what I mean, that barely has a car battery hooked up to anything. But he doesn't care. You know, it melts away any of those lines.
Right.
You know what I mean? I remember that instant thinking that. I'm like, wow, you know, this is definitely cool. Like,
yeah, that's how that place was, too. Because, again, it was Mother's Day when we went.
Right.
So it was by reservation. And you had, I'm not lying, you had some of the guys pulling up in these fine wooden boats.
Right.
These launches.
Right. Yeah,
you know what I mean? With the shiny everything.
Oh, yeah.
With the blue sport coat on, right. With the hat.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, you know? Right. And I was like, wow, okay, this is a whole different scene.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it wasn't the academy,
Naval
Academy, but it was that type of attire.
Right.
I guess for the people that are there that are really into that type of culture. And, but again, it's all about sailing once you're...
And, I mean, it still exists, but it was funny. We pulled up into the Magathie River in one of our cruises. We had, like, eight different boats, you know. And the Gibson Island Yacht Club's over there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of in the next cove over. So we all got in our dinghies to go exploring. And we all end up, hey, there's a mooring field, there's boats, you know. So we go pull them up to the dock. And, of course, there's the guy with the white naval shirt with the three yellow stripes on his lapel, you know what I mean? Like, he's all official, you know. You're doing all these guys, we had like five dinghies worth of people, and we come piling off on this dock, and the guy's like, can I help you? You know, and we're all like, oh yeah, we're from Hans's Point. You know, you have reciprocation with us, and he's like, I don't think so. And we're like, well, you know, we're just looking for some ice and this, that, and the other thing. And he's like, well, you know, he's like, I think we can sell you some ice, you know. So while we're over there getting ice, like all the women run into the bathroom and start taking showers.
They're looted.
Yeah.
They're coming for our booty.
Right. But it was literally like the entrance to a gated community right there. You know what I mean? So the exclusivity or whatever is still there. But it was just funny. You know what I mean? This guy's driving a launch. He's driving the people out on the mooring field in their nice launch, like you were saying.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's definitely an upper echelon thing going on there. But when you start talking sailing with somebody, I think all that just kind of goes away.
Well, I think everything, you know, it is like it is in the regular world. You have some people who are genuine and good, and you have assholes everywhere.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I think in general, my my experience, you know, as an African-American guy has been, you know, very good.
Yeah.
Except for that one cat. I don't know if you saw the video I have on YouTube.
I don't know. I didn't catch all your videos. I just saw the ones from the boat show this time.
As I was looking for a consulting naval architect,
okay.
I called a very, very popular dude.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of books out there.
Yeah.
And we had a great conversation about boats, and, I wanted him to do a hull stability study.
Uh-huh.
On my boat, he said, great, just, you know, send me a check for $100 and,
right.
You know, I'll work and it's not going to be much.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, cool. And so as our conversation ended, we were just talking general stuff about sailing.
Yeah.
And he asked me where I was. I said, I'm in Maryland. He said, well, I used to live in Maryland. And I remember it being really crowded.
Yeah.
Like, I remember going to the movies one time and I wanted to sit in the balcony, but... You know, the balcony was for black people only, and you know, I don't like black people. So I was one, like, thinking, do I sound like a white guy? Like, okay. And you know, two, like, dude, you're stupid. You don't know, even if I was white, my wife could be black.
Oh,
or,
yeah, right,
you know,
right,
whatever.
Right.
But this is a real old guy.
I was gonna say, this guy sounds like he's a little
and
more.
And I'll
than
tell
himself.
You his name off camera.
Yeah,
but it was really just as shocking, but I mean, again, that is of a time period, a time
frame.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, people have their own understanding and...
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought it was... And, you know, it's not something I think about. Obviously, I think most of the people in our club are white. There's a couple Asians, whatever. You know, it's not something I ever even think about. Mm-hmm. But I remember one of the first Delmarvas, there's a guy named Marcus Asante. He's up in Harrisburg. You know,
Marcus, is he, the university's in the
is
club.
Is he in that? Yeah. Okay, I didn't know if he was. I think I'm friends with him on Facebook, and I found him on Facebook through that. And, you know, him and all his buddies got on a boat with everybody, you know what I mean? It was like, it was strange to me at first. I'm like, well, I never even thought about that. But yeah, I guess, you know, whatever. Yeah, you know,
Marcus is like, he's the founder of the club.
Is he?
Yeah, okay. He's been reelected Commodore.
Okay.
Okay. Because yeah, nobody else.
I've never met him in person, but you know, I've been friends with him on Facebook.
Don't
for
drink
like
with
years.
Him.
Oh, no.
Drink with the table, man. And he works in the industry too.
Does he? Okay. Yeah, I didn't know.
Marcus is so, I mean, he's a musician. As a group in Baltimore, used to be a group called Fertile Ground, which is a quote of neo-soul kind of R&B group.
Right.
He was the drummer for the band for many, many years.
Oh, that's cool.
And, you know, when I first heard about him and saw him, I was like, I know this guy from somewhere. Then I remember the album cover that he was a drummer on. So he's a musician. He does all this stuff.
Oh, wow.
But he got into sailing through working at the, I think, Maritime Museum for Industry or something like that.
Right.
But nonetheless, he started the club probably 13, 14 years ago and is a Commodore again.
Okay.
But yeah. Really cool guy, really knowledgeable. He works for, I forget the name of the marina, but it's in, in Annapolis, the river that goes downtown or the branch of that goes downtown to Eagle Alley, right?
Yeah.
And then you have the other side of Eastport.
Uh-huh.
What is
like
that
Back
branch
Creek
called?
Or something.
Back Creek.
Yeah.
He works for a company back there that does everything in the boats. Electronics, hull work. So he actually works in the industry. So he's a good resource if you ever need to find somebody to do something that you don't.
Maybe he'll give me a job someday.
Yeah, he's an amazing resource, and he's all about sailing.
Cool.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like, Marcus, can we talk about football?
Anything. Cool. Well, I was going to ask, what I wanted to ask is, like, when you were taking these classes, you know, because you were new to sailing, I mean, basically still, you're second year into it, right?
Right.
So you took all those classes in like, two seasons. That's a lot. Yeah. That's actually a lot of sailing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it took me 4 months, 3 months before I ever took my boat out by myself. It took me 3 years, really, to get kind of beyond Turkey Point, which is the lighthouse down the way from the Northeast River, you know what I mean? Like, especially going out overnight, all that kind of stuff. I mean, how did you feel when you were first taken? Was it easy? Was it hard? Was it nervous?
It's like finding your long lost mother. There was absolutely no point in time when I did not feel totally comfortable.
Yeah, that's good.
The only part that I don't feel comfortable about is the actual boat.
Okay.
Again, talking about the Maryland School of Sailing.
Right.
The second boat I learned to sail on is, other than the Rainbow 24, is a big old sturdy island packet.
Okay,
32.
Yeah.
That's what they teach the majority of their classes on.
There's an island packet dealer type of thing
on Eastern Shore.
Yeah.
And in Rock Hall. So they teach on the island packet 32, which is totally different
from
that Rainbow. Yeah. And it's a 32-foot boat, so not too much bigger. Then, well, you have a 26.
26. But
probably missed bigger than that. But you're talking about the average 30-foot boat. You know, and the only problem I have with boats is the boats. It's not the weather, even though I don't know if I have this video on YouTube or not, but
Yeah.
You know, my first night staying on the boat.
Oh, no.
That first season. It was in the fall. It started raining at night. And I'm in the V-berth in the front. And the wind is howling. The halyards are clanging.
Right.
I woke up like, what the hell is this? Is it like Oz? Is the boat getting ready to get picked up?
Right.
And I look out the porthole and it's like nothing.
Yeah.
It just sounds like all this noise. I guess because of the way the wind was blowing down the mast.
It's disconcerting when you hear that stuff for the first time. You know what I mean?
But no, actually, the wind was blowing. The boat wasn't moving, but I could see the trees moving in the background. But the sea state was fine.
Yeah.
And that next day, Googled what the weather was at night, and a little squall did come through. It got up to 30 knots of wind.
Right.
So I did what I heard was real, but it was just becoming familiar with the sounds of the boat when you're sleeping.
Oh, yeah.
So, that was funny as hell, I thought. I'm looking for Armageddon outside, and it's like nothing at all.
I remember my old girlfriend, when she first came down, we spent the night on my buddy's boat, which was a Catalina 25. And it was in the spring. In the spring, early in the spring, you get these 30, 40, not maybe not 40, but like 30 knot gusts and wind that's 25 plus sustained. And you'll get it for like a day and a half straight. I mean, it's just a front coming through, and it just... So we went to bed that night, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, man, this thing came through, and it was just...
Wow.
And, like, we all woke up, and we're like, you know, she's kind of freaking out. What's going to happen? Are we going to sink? You know, all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, this is probably my second year, and I'm like, well, I don't think so, but, you know, we're on a mooring, I don't know, you know.
Right, right.
And literally, we were getting, we get like 3 foot of chop there sometimes, if the wind's just right, fetch coming across, and, you know, the boat's literally just going to, you know, we're not getting any sleep that night, right, you know what I mean? We got up the next morning, it was still blowing, still howling, you know what I mean? It's just something you have to get used to.
Yeah.
Annapolis Harbor is horrible if you get, and I'm not sure what the wind is, if it's southeast. If you get a good wind coming in that Severn River,
yeah, southeast,
it'll come up and it'll bounce in, and that whole basin just gets choppy. You know, it can come from the north, east, west, whatever, a different wind, mm-hmm. and it'll be calm as anything. But I've spent many a night in that outside part of the harbor where, I mean, literally, we were just...
I mean, it makes sense, I mean, if you think about it, because the Severn River runs, you know, northeast...
It's, right.
Northwest to southeast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you get a good southeasterly coming up there, you know, it's going to push like a storm surge, and that water's going to bounce around on the tributary. Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of makes sense there.
That's... Excuse me, that's very nerve-wracking when you're in there, because you're like, are your lines going to hold, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine.
Is your sail going to stay, you know, looped together or whatever, you know?
But, I mean, with regard to ever feeling, you know, scared or nothing like that, there's never anything like that. My first season soloing, because up until this year, everything's been with crew or on one of the classes with a captain.
Right.
This year I started chartering on my own.
Right.
And my lady friend, mm-hmm. she chartered a boat for me, surprise.
Oh, that's
on the 4th of July.
Yeah, yeah.
Now the 4th of July was right after a hurricane had come up.
Uh-huh.
And so it was blowing 30.
It was pretty windy.
It was it was blowing 30, 31 most of the day. And we went out and I rented this, she had gotten it from South River Boat Rentals, and they have old boats, right?
Right.
It's basically party boats.
Right.
And so me and my friends are going out, and we're going out in 30 knots. So for a second there, I thought, like, this is the biggest wind I've ever sailed in.
Right.
I've been in, you know, like I said, it was in wind before, but we were anchored or at
the
dock, but I've ever, or with another captain.
Right.
So I thought about it for a second, okay, what do I need to do? And then, and then I fall back on my training.
Right.
And so the guy at the boat said, you'll have no problem, just use head sail alone. You won't need your mainsail up at all today.
Yeah.
So we were getting it, we were heading down the South River,
uh-huh.
heading out and into the bay.
Right.
And the limit for the day from the charter company was the lighthouse.
Okay.
Thomas Point Lighthouse.
Right.
And so, you know, we go down the South River, we're getting wind from,
uh-huh.
from, where was the wind coming from? We're probably on a beam reach,
uh-huh.
sort of.
Price, well,
little south. Bit, yeah, a little bit further forward of a beam reach. But,
yeah.
Because the wind was probably blowing from the south, a little bit from the southeast.
Yeah.
But, so we cross the breakwaters, getting into the bay, right?
Right.
And the sea state totally changes.
Oh, it
gets rough and choppy.
Right.
And so we come down and then we tack to port, and we're trying to cut across the chop, get into the bay to head to the Thomas Point Light.
Right.
And it's like a rodeo. It's up and down and up. Right. I'm loving it. The boat's healing a little bit.
Right.
I'm loving this, right?
Yeah.
And then I turn around and I look at all my friends on the boat.
Yeah.
And they're not loving it. Yeah. They're not loving it so much, right? I'm like, shit. I gotta be responsible.
Yeah.
I have to care about my crew.
Yeah.
And guess first.
Yeah.
Oh well, no more fun.
Yeah.
So the guy that was helming at the time, a friend of mine, I told him to you know, tack the boat around,
uh-huh.
and we're going to go back into the river.
Yeah.
So, you know, he tacks the boat, turns the boat to port,
right.
trying to get back into the river, and we're not getting back.
Uh-oh.
Because the river's flowing down.
Now,
we're not getting back.
Right.
We're not getting back. So I said, okay, let's turn the engine on. So he turns the engine on.
Yeah.
And we're not making, we may be moving a half knot and making way.
Right.
So I'm like, uh-oh.
Okay. It's got to freak you out a little.
Fall back the train. What do we do?
Yeah.
I roll in the head sail. I fall off the wind.
Yeah.
And I cut across. Instead of trying to head right back up, I cut across.
Right.
You know. And the thing about it is,
I didn't get scared.
Right, that's right? good.
I didn't let anybody else know that there may be a problem.
Right. Even though there wasn't a problem.
Because the thing about that is using a charter boat, it could be a piece of crap.
Yeah.
And
you don't know. It's not your
You don't know. And I do have my reservations about some charter companies that don't take care of their stuff. But not saying that's what happened then. But basically, I cut across the wind and tried to put the wind on my on the aft quarter and skirted back and got back into the river. It was much, much more calm.
Didn't that's a pretty wide open river, so you can kind of play around in
there. Yeah, you can play around there. Nobody threw up.
Yeah.
It was early in the season, July. There weren't too many crab pots out, so much to worry about. Yeah. But it was just at that instance, I said, you know what? It came naturally.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
You know, how to assess what's going on.
Yeah.
And how to solve a problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I took the boat back in, and we had a good rest of the afternoon.
Good time, yeah.
Right, and it helped to build the confidence. It was, it was 29 to 31 that day.
Right. Yeah, and my friend Tom always told me before I bought my own boat, he's like, you can sniff the wind, you know where it's coming, you know what to do, you know what I mean? I was like, all right. And then when I've got my boat the first time, like I said, it took me about 3 months till I have to learn how to do this stuff on my own. You know, I got to let go of the mooring lines and I just have to go do it. You know what I mean? And I was nothing but a ball of butterflies. You know what I mean? And I think I've said this before in a podcast. I mean, literally it took me probably 4 or 5 years till I was confident. You know what I mean? And I had to go through all the, you know, you have to go through some kind of storm. You have to go through when things aren't working right. You got to go through when things break. You know what I mean? Until you kind of earn that confidence. But once you get a sniff of it, you know, and especially if you've been trained, you know, like I've never taken a sailing class. So you've probably gotten exposed to a whole lot more in 2 years than I ever did in the first 5 years.
You make up for it with the experience.
Right. It just takes a little longer to get into those situations and then have your friends around. Like when the first storm was coming on us, we were coming up the Northeast River and a storm had gone right to our north. Like literally the rain was like a mile ahead of us. And we got a little gust of wind, and that was about it. But by this time, we were motoring up the channel. Well, here comes the next one. You can see it. You know what I mean? You get on radar, and it's like, oop, uh-oh. Like, we're not going to make it back in time, so we're going to have to deal with this. And basically, I got on the radio to my friends. I'm like, all right, what's the plan? What do we do? This is my first storm. And they're like, well, all right, just when the wind gets too bad, turn into it, keep your motor running, and just try and don't get too much ahead of yourself, because the channel's really only half mile or a quarter mile wide there, so you can't just indefinitely run into the wind. You have to kind of gauge where you're going. And, you know, you can see the wind line coming across. Here it comes. Mm-hmm. We're going this way. So it's like once the wind hit and it was enough that it was pushing me off and I couldn't compensate for it, it was like, okay, gun the motor, get turned into the into the wind. And then there was a float. Somebody had a trap out or something. And I remember watching that float, and it fogged in to the point where I couldn't really see. I could barely see the guys next to me.
Right.
And, I mean, I was soaked in the first half a second because I don't have a dodger or anything. So I had to take my glasses off. I put my bell out so I could ring it in the fog, you know what I mean? And I'm just holding it. I'm watching this float. And for the next 20 minutes, I was just kind of keeping an eye on this float. And at one point, I got distracted, and the boat blew sideways. Mm-hmm. I'm like, uh-oh, all right. Gun it. Get it back in, you know what I mean? And luckily, there wasn't a whole lot of lightning. And literally the high wind lasted like 15 minutes tops. Okay. And then the rain dissipated, the fog cleared away, and it was a nice, beautiful day again.
Was the channel wide enough to heave to in, or was it too?
It was too tight. Tight for that. Yeah, we were already close to the shore on the windward side or whatever. We were close. The wind was coming this way. We were going that way if we would have gotten blown in. So, yeah, we had to kind of keep watch. So, I mean, that was after I did that. And, of course, my friend, you know, Robert's like, you think that was a thunderstorm?
Oh, really?
And I'm like, well, that was pretty gnarly. He's like, that wasn't a thunderstorm. Mm. And I'm like, okay.
If you say so, yeah.
If you say so, right. But since then, I've been in heavier weather, and you know, you learn what to do. When you know it's coming, you can prepare for it.
Right.
You know what I mean? You kind of gauge, all right, A, am I going out today? If I have to go out today, what are the conditions going to be? And if we're on a 12-day cruise, you know, you basically, you know, you have to go at some point, whether it's storming or windy or not, you know, you have to kind of deal with what's coming. So you get used to that, and then, you know, if you're going to run with just your main or your jib, one or the other, it's easier to get your jib in if you have to.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we'll do, if we got any kind of downwind component, we'll just leave the main down like you were talking about. Right. or I have a Jiffy Reef system, which I actually, all I got to do is pull tight, let this one loose, and it'll cinch down. And, right. And you know, I've done that once or twice.
Yeah, that's the thing. I haven't, and I don't say I want to and experience that, because some people have sailed for 30 years and never really ran anything too bad. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't know what you're going to do until you're there. Because no matter what kind of radar you have, and this is what people don't realize about weather. If you think about all weather, has the potential to be just like a tornado.
Oh, yeah.
A tornado can just pop up.
Yep.
You know, you're dealing with air pressures and heat and sunlight. And there's so many things that can happen instantaneously.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people talk about, you know, if you're going to do, you know, a voyage, you get your weather tracker to help you make your plan. No, that's good for the long term, but all weather is local.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I remember when I was young, in my mom's house in East Baltimore, it was raining out back and not raining out
front.
I mean, a regular 30-foot row house, you know? Weather is really local, and you got to learn how to handle it.
Yeah. I remember we were sitting in Kara Cove, which is just, you know, it's literally a half an hour, 45 minutes from our club on a sailboat when you're running the motor. So I remember sitting there. We were anchored up. I had a friend with a pontoon boat. You know, it's like we're just sitting there enjoying a couple drinks, whatever, you know, not planning on anything. And I remember I got a phone call from a buddy of mine who sailed, who was at home. And he's like, "Hey, are you on the water?" I'm like, "Yeah, why?" He's like, "Where are you at?" And I said, "Kara Cove. We're anchored up, having a couple beers, you know." And he's like, "You better get home. You got a storm coming." And I'm like, looking around, you know, I don't see anything. And at that point, this was probably like 2006. I didn't have a phone with like the internet and everything on it. You know what I mean? So I'm just kind of like, okay, you know. So I hung up with him and I announced to my buddy on the pontoon boat, I'm like, "Hey, you know, apparently there's a big storm coming that we're supposed to, you know, hightail it back, you know." So literally, we just pull up anchor, we start heading back. And, you know, he's on a pontoon boat. It takes him 10 minutes to get back. He's fine, you know what I mean? I'm coming around the bend. I got another 10 minutes to go, and here it comes. And it's coming hard, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, "Oh my God." And I remember getting like the first loop on my mooring ball, and that was it. You know what I mean? It was just hell breaking loose all over the place. Literally 40 minutes, and it was completely different. You know what I mean? And then that blew through half an hour later. The sun came out. Everything was fine. You know, my buddy got back in his pontoon boat. He went back out, you know.
Right.
I'm like, "Nah, I'm going to stay put."
I think I'm done. You know? Got to know how to adapt to situations. Again, we're swapping stories, I'll tell you. I'll tell you a story. This year, me and a bunch of friends chartered a boat, and we went out and we sailed down to Annapolis. And we were going to anchor out in the South Anchorage. And call up the
water taxi
to come. Go to Pusser's, drink, and eat. So we get to the South Anchorage, and you know, spot, there's two or three boats there, not a lot at that point in time. So I went around, figured out where I was going to anchor, you know, motored up, dropped the hook, went to put the boat in reverse. There's no reverse. The sails are down. So here I am at the mercy of whatever the hell is going to happen. With, you know, trying to float around this anchor. And so basically what I did, I just felt where the wind was, like, instantaneously to try to, you know, control the rudder to try to get the boat to fall back. You know, it worked. I ended up floating around the anchor once, but then got it to fall back. And the hook set. You know, I looked at the boats around me, saw where I was and what was going on, and everything worked out. So it's not, you know, it's maintaining a calm head and not freaking out when something that you're used to doesn't work. Like the parties would say, "Oh, you don't need an engine anchor anyway." But we like to put that hook down, let it set, and yank on it to make sure we're good.
Well, this summer I was out on my week cruise, and we went to Bodkin Creek again. And we dropped anchor. I went over to my buddy. It was me and my buddy Tom. He has a 30-foot Bristol. I went over to his boat. We had lunch.
What channel cut?
It's not a channel cut. It's just a Bristol 29.9.
Okay.
But it's built by Bristol, so it's got all the nice wood and everything.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was thinking about.
So I went over to his boat, had lunch. You know, we're drinking a couple beers, playing guitar, you know. And it was kind of cloudy, but we knew something was coming. So, you know, I felt the first raindrop, and I'm like, "All right, now we've been sitting there for 3 hours. You know what I mean? My boat's over here. His is over there. We're both on anchor, you know." So I get in my dinghy, I go back to my boat, and I'm down below, and I'm screwing around, and I hear on the radio like 5 minutes later, he's like, dude, I think you're dragging, you know. And I literally popped my head out, and there was a boathouse along the shore that was like 150 yards away. All of a sudden, it's like 50 yards away. Mm. And I'm drifting.
Okay, stop.
That's fine. And thank you. And like, here it comes, you know what I mean? So I'm like up, out, got the motor running, put it in gear, and I'm trying to engage it just enough to go forward, not going to be going backwards anymore, because there's shore over here too, and it gets shallow in there, you know, because we're in a deep part. So I got it in, I had my autopilot, or I have a little, one of those Raytheon or whatever, a tiller steer autopilot things. I had that on to keep me straight. Had the motor on just enough to keep going forward. Then I went up front to wrangle with the anchor. Pulled it up, and it had gotten tripped by a piece of wood or something underneath there. You know what I mean? So I went out, went around him, because I had made the mistake earlier, the year 2 years before, not pulling the anchor up the whole way when it was dragging. And I ended up snagging my buddy Tom's anchor. And then, you know, it was a big mess. So this time I went out around, I had the anchor up, and then just reset it in the middle of this storm, you know what I mean? And it's good. Blowing, it's everything, but as long as you got propulsion, you're good.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you don't have propulsion, you're screwed, then you get the bumpers out and start fending off because, you know, there's nothing you can do. But I got the anchor reset, and then literally I just swung 90 degrees off the wind. And there, I remember there was a tree on this side and the side of a house on shore on this side, and I was literally just swinging between the two of them. And as long as I wasn't swinging anywhere else, after like 5 minutes, right, I was like, okay, I'm good, I'm not going anywhere, you know what I mean? But it was just funny how it sat for 3 hours, in a gentle breeze, it wasn't like super windy or anything in the first 3 hours. Nothing changed. As soon as that first gust of wind came up, it popped that anchor up and off I went, you know what I mean? So
yeah, you got it. The only way you learn is by, you know,
by doing
some stuff. You just hope you don't break anything.
Oh, yeah.
In the process of learning.
Definitely. You want to take a quick break?
All right. Thanks for listening to part one of two with Kamau Iandiotero. You can find him. He has a YouTube channel. He did a bunch of videos that he posted up on Andy Schell's podcast webpage, 59-north.com, from the boat show. But he also has his own YouTube channel. Go to www.youtube.com/user/KamauIandiotero, and you will find all his videos up on YouTube. You can catch me at the Escape Pods, all one word, on Twitter. You can get me at jeffrey.wedig@gmail.com, and hope you enjoyed the show. Send me your comments and thoughts, and spread the word on iTunes. Give a star rating on iTunes if you're finding us there. Again, we'll catch you next week with part two. Thanks a lot.
Hi, this is Bob Bitchin from Cruising Outpost Magazine, and you are listening to Shooting the Breeze Sailing Podcast from theescapepods.com.
This is Captain Jeffrey Wedding.
And Chris Smoker.
You're listening to the Shooting the Breeze podcast on escapepods.com. Sail on, brother.